Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
A what?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? I'm your gay ass host, Eric Williams, and this week we have Kevin Zach on the podcast, who you might follow for his stupid Nicole Kidman memes, or maybe his Broadway bits on Instagram, or if you're me, you started following him in 2017, simply because he's hot and he does theater. Now, speaking of theater, Kevin wrote and directed an off-Broadway play called Ginger Twinsies that is sure to be a goddamn hit. It literally opened a few days ago, and I got to see the show in New York City. And the second I walked out of that theater, I was like, this is so fucking stupid and brilliant at the same time. And I want every single gay guy and girly to see this show. So, of course, we talk about the show itself and some more, you know, horny questions, because I am me after all. So please enjoy this delicious man, Kevin Zach.
Kevin Zach is fresh off of an off-Broadway opening, and he's here on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Kevin, question number one. Devil Wears Prada has a sequel. They're currently filming it. How do you feel about what it's going to be? Are you nervous?
I am thrilled, to be honest. I know that there was like a second book, so I don't know if it's like based off.
Wait, was there?
Yeah, apparently there's a sequel to the book. So I'm assuming it's based off of that, but I'm all for it. I think give us 10 of them. I don't care anymore. The world's ending. Give us more of what we need, what we love.
Okay, so what happens in Devil Wears Prada 4? Is it Andy Sachs has a gay son? Is it the true villain of the first movie comes back and he is an actual Gotham City villain killing civilians? What's happening?
I think by 4, someone is dead and comes back as a ghost. Like, I think it's going to go like the Mamma Mia trajectory, where it's like, oh, well, Meryl was only free for 10 minutes this time. So now she's actually the devil and comes back, you know, from hell. And helps either end the world or start the apocalypse because nobody's ready. So
yeah.
She's like, why is nobody ready? And so yes. She like just causes.
And then fire comes out of her mouth.
Exactly.
You know what's funny is that you bringing this up brings to mind a movie that made me gay, which I'm not sure if you would also have the same gay reference. The movie Bedazzled with Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth Hurley. Did that similarly make you gay, or is it just me?
Well, no. Here's the thing is I loved Elizabeth Hurley. So it's like Brendan Fraser, yes, is so sexy, especially in the 90s with George of the Jungle and Bedazzled. But it was me wanting to be Elizabeth Hurley in Bedazzled that helped make me gay. It wasn't pinnacle. Like, I can't remember what I said last night on your podcast. It was probably Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy. But that's in the same era of like fabulous evil women
who are like head to toe couture / costume change / perfect beat.
drag queens.
They're
drag queens.
Yeah, I do think that Elizabeth Hurley is a drag queen in the film Bedazzled. And what I also know is that something that has reaffirmed my gayness
is your off-Broadway hit Ginger Twinsies, which I had the delicious pleasure of seeing when I was in New York. Literally, like, if I think it was a week or two ago. It feels, I don't know. I want to ask you more specific questions about the show, but can I just butter your biscuit
Please
for a second
do.
And tell you that I came, once the show ended and I saw you, my first thought was, A, I need to tell this man how brilliant it was. B, I need to tell him how hard it is to do something like this and that you did it so beautifully. And C, I need to have you back on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And look, it's all
Ta-da.
Coming true.
I'm so, so grateful you came, and you were so, so sweet after the show. I was blown away by what you said, and I'm so appreciative.
It's so real. It's like I went into it you know, when you're in New York City after not living there, it's exhausting to like pack your schedule with like seeing friends, mm-hmm. shows, and then like sucking the dick you want to suck. And then when I got to your show, I was like, you know what? So fucking excited to be here. Am I beyond exhausted? Sure. Did I see a show a few hours ago? I did. And the second that your show started, any worry outside of that theater goes away. And I swear to God, I could have run a fucking, well, I couldn't have physically run a marathon, but if I could physically run a marathon, I could have run a marathon and seen your show and still not thought about the pain in my knees, because that fucking show is a joke a second. The cast is genius. The bits, the pacing, the set, the everything. I just need to let you know that we're going to get into questions about the BTS of the show, but just like anybody in New York right now or visiting New York, the show is currently running till October 26th, right?
Correct, yeah.
So anybody who's there, like, if you need to know, Eric, are you really saying to go see the show? I'm telling everybody who
thank
will listen,
you,
Kevin,
thank you.
To come see the show. It is so what we need right now. And yeah, let's tell the listeners, what's our herstory? You did this podcast. Was that what happened first?
Yeah, I think it was 2023, I want to say. I did your podcast kind of just coming out of the pandemic type vibes. But yeah, we knew each other over Instagram.
Then I asked for you to do the pod. I'm also thrilled to have a very loud lawnmower outside my window while we're talking. So I asked you to do the podcast, and then you did That's a Gay Ass live show in Brooklyn. It was my first time doing the live show in New York. You fucking killed it.
It
was very, very fun. You won. You won the gay-ass golden dildo because you were the champion of character actress knowledge, cock. and then I got to flirt with you after the show at a bar, which was a thrill. And then I got to see Ginger Twinsies. Can you tell the listeners, just if they don't know, you first were giving like theater actress, right?
Yeah. I mean, basically up until the pandemic, I was just a musical theater actress. I did a lot of various musical theater shows, and I did Waitress, I did Cats, I did a bunch of other off-Broadway nonsense, Clinton the Musical, Silence the Musical, anything the musical I probably did. And I was mainly doing that up until the pandemic, when everything just, you know, sidelined all work and I sort of had to shift gears. And then I did, and I started doing, I had written before the pandemic. I'd done a lot of writing, and I got a musical optioned. It was a parody of Murder, She Wrote, called Bloody Bloody Jessica Fletcher. and then I just was like, okay, well, what if theater never comes back? What do I do? And so at first I was just posting stupid, you know, things that made me laugh on Instagram. And then Nicole Kidman found them, and she started sharing them. And that's kind of what got me connected to a lot of people, which is insane to say. But I mean, basically,
Nicole Kidman.
Heard of her. But I mean, Ginger Twinsies itself was born really out of necessity. No one's calling me. No one's knocking on my door, right? So it's like, I don't want to say no one, but like nothing that's sustainable, nothing that's, you know, I was tired of begging for jobs, auditioning for jobs, looking for work. And I did a reading of the Parent Trap screenplay at Littlefield 2 years ago to raise money for people affected by the writers and actors strikes. And I had Ira Madison and Jeffrey Self as the twins, and Matt Wilkes was in it, and Philip Turrettula was in it, and Hannah Solo, Josh Lehman, like a real murderer's row of serial killers. And it sold out and people came in costume and spoke along. And I thought to myself, oh, if I don't do something with this, somebody else will. And even if the gag is just that these are not actually 11-year-old redheaded twins, let's start there. And I called my friend Preston Whiteway, who's a genius producer, and he put together the money for the first reading. And we got more people on board and we did a second reading. And then suddenly the Orpheum was available, which is wild because I never, ever imagined such a big theater or a historic theater. It's, you know, for an off-Broadway show opening cold in New York City, that's a lot of seats to fill. So, and we're very early in the run and ticket sales are trending upwards and the word of mouth is excellent. So it's all on the right path, but we definitely need to be like, we are pushing, we need to keep pushing. So it's like, it's wild. Popping my pussy for everything. I'll do whatever right now. I got my knee pads on. I'm ready to do whatever.
You're popping your pussies for pickets.
Yeah.
Jaw stretch, babe. No, it really speaks to me. The whole, like, no one was banging down your door to say, hey, please do Ginger Twinsies off Broadway. But the fact that you said out of necessity, and also, like, let's be clear, you're knowing your worth here, which is that you know that you are, sure, a musical theater actress, but you also know that you have a point of view and you can work your tits off. And I think that I have similarly felt that same pull, because I don't know if I told you this, but long story short, I told my parents after 9 months of unemployment in the pandemic that I was quitting the business. I said, I'm done with the entertainment industry. I'm tired of being treated like I don't have any value. And then I ended up getting a survival job that I actually really enjoyed and that allowed me to start this podcast. And then I was like, well, I might as well just continue to make my own shit and then hope that, you know, we create our own doors. And that's why I was so inspired seeing your show because, you know, I feel like in a way, is it a gross if I say that we are coming up together? Is that annoying?
I love that. I feel that's great.
I feel like seeing someone like you work so hard to make your dreams come true is so inspiring. But before we get into the current state, let's have the listeners find out a bit about your herstory. You are super into these memes. I know that of course, Nicole Kidman of it all is hugely important. You also have done a lot of Senator Amy Klobuchar work. In fact, we're still waiting on the revival of Sunset Klobuchar. What would you say was your origin of loving either musical theater, stupidity? Were you a star in your high school theater? What's the origin story?
I mean, I grew up in Buffalo, and I'm the youngest of three. And I don't know, it's just what I ended up doing was theater and musical theater. And to be honest, like throughout my 20s and even my early 30s, which I don't really count because like I was 31 when we went into the pandemic and I came out like 37. So, or 32.
Wait, what year were you born, if you don't mind me asking?
1988.
Oh, and I'm 89. Look at us girlies. Okay.
And it's like in my 20s, I mean, I went to state school. I went to SUNY Buffalo and that theater program, I met a lot of wonderful people, but they did not tell you how to do anything. So all you know what to do is just go to open calls in New York City for, I don't know, the Non-Equity Beauty and the Beast tour. And and that's all you know how to do. And like, I did take classes at UCB, but I was given the musical theater carrot just enough to keep quitting those classes where it's like, I do 201 and then I get this show and I'd have to quit. So it's like, I got enough gainful employment and health insurance from musical theater land that I kept just being doing musical theater. So, and I always will always love Broadway and musical theater, but I never really quite fit in and I still don't and I never will. And part of me always knew that, but, and it's really, you know, the creating posts, like I said, earlier, like it just came out of necessity of trying to make myself laugh. And luckily it made other people laugh too. So the comedy of it all, it's always been there as well. I just did not have any of the education or showbiz smarts about television development, anything like that, or, you know, sticking with an improv group or, you know, completing this or just putting up my own shows that have nothing to do with Midtown Manhattan. You know, it's you just kind of, when you don't have the wherewithal or the knowledge or the right group of people that know about it around you, you're just kind of a wandering around a bit. And I was lucky to be lucky, but at the same time, it's like I'm a stepsister trying on the glass slipper, and it just never works.
I think a lot of gay kids like gravitate towards musical theater because it's the only place we felt safe. And then we're like, well, I guess we should create a career in this because it saved our lives and we love it so much. But then a lot of us don't exactly fit into like the Book of Mormon tap dancing, skrelting it on insanely high note. And then we feel that same lostness again. And I think it's almost like, yeah, it's like when I went to college at NYU, they definitely taught me how to act and then nothing beyond that. Like I like had zero clue how to have a fucking career. Listen,
absolutely. I think because growing up, Broadway is the most accessible thing. You can get the cast albums. You could see them on TV. I grew up in Buffalo, so it's like New York City wasn't that far away. National tours came through. And then you can absolutely go to open calls for things. You can't go to open calls for television or for stand-up or for, I don't know, I'm not a stand-up comedian, but like, I mean, the one time I had an audition for Book of Mormon, I was 24 or 25, and they told me I had an old soul. So it's like, what, you're telling a 24-year-old they have an old soul? What do I do with that? But of course, I didn't do anything with that. But
kill yourself.
I killed myself.
I think that's what they intended. I identify. I botched. I had one. I also auditioned once for Book of Mormon and didn't sleep the night before because I thought this is it. And if I don't book this, then my life is over. And then guess what? I botched the audition and then did not end it all. But
yet,
I'm still waiting.
Yeah. So it's, you know, I don't regret anything I've done. Like, I'm so thrilled I did all that. I'm so thrilled I'm doing Ginger Twinsies now, as opposed to when I was 25 or 26. Like, I didn't have the focus then, or whatever else it takes. But because if I didn't do Ginger Twinsies now, I wouldn't know this cast. This cast is incredible. I met Philip Tarantula through musical theater. I met Anissa Folds through musical theater. I met Jimmy Ray through musical theater. So it's like, without musical theater and doing what I did, I wouldn't have met most of the cast that I have in the show, who are absolute geniuses.
Oh, and when people say that about their own show, it's like, sure, you hope that your own cast is genius, but I'm going to co-sign and say that this cast, every fucking person is pitch perfect. I mean, yes, Russell Daniels and Anissa Folds as the twins are like, I mean, it's, people are saying to me like, oh, is it kind of giving like Titanic? And I'm saying that is absolutely like the similar outlandish inappropriateness with the throwbackiness of Titanic. And I, of course, Russell Daniels was a part of both of those. And so the casting is so genius because Grace Ryder and Mitch Wood, who are both like TikTok celebritinas, are both unbelievable in the show. Genius casting. Matt Wilkes, who I have had a crush on for, you know, many, many years. You give a beautiful...
Have you had him on the podcast yet?
I have not. And it's like it's like a don't meet your heroes moment. And I eventually should.
He is the sweetest man alive. You absolutely...
I had John Riddle on, his gorgeous man, but I have not yet had Matt Wilkes on.
The two of them are two of my favorite people, two of my closest friends. I could not speak more highly of both of them. They are sweet as
pie. So you're saying they're hot and nice.
I am. Yeah, it is the twofold there. And I just adore them both. So you should absolutely have Matt on. You guys would have a ball talking.
Oh, I'm definitely going to then take your advice because you've never steered me wrong. What was the behind the decision in the show? For anybody who hasn't seen it yet, Matt Wilkes, they do a really great reveal of his chiseled hairy body. Tell me, Kevin, what was underneath that decision? Was it about the storytelling? Was it about your own obsession with hairy men? How did we get there?
I do like hairy men, but it's kind of came from the movie of The Parent Trap. It's what Meredith Blake does in that scene, she opens Dennis Quaid's shirt and she says, "I like it when you wear your shirt like this. I like to see a little chest hair." So what's the parody version of that? She mauls him and rips his clothes off, right? So I didn't want to do it. Yeah, it's gratuitous. It's off Broadway. It's parody. So, and it's Matt Wilkes. So yes, all of the goodies are there, but it is part of the actual source material, as loose as I want to say source material. And it's, so that's where that inspiration came. Elaine Hendricks did Dennis Quaid in the film. I was like, well, let's take it to a 20 as opposed to a 10 and just rip all his clothes off. And the audience seems to really like it. So
it's probably just my scream reverberating through the halls of the Orpheum every night.
Oh, please come back and scream every night. And then the Russell Daniels of it all. Russell Daniels is a magic person, magic man, magic performer. I started as a fan of his because I saw him in Titanic and I said, who is this monster? I must have them. And when we did the workshops of Ginger Twinsies, it was Josh Lehman playing Annie, who is also brilliant. One of my oldest, dearest friends who I met through musical theater. And
Death Becomes Her.
And I worked with him in Death Becomes Her, and he couldn't get out of his contract. And the first person I thought of was Russell Daniels, and got in touch with him through our casting director, Xavier Rubiano. And we met for coffee and he read the script and thank God he said yes. And he is just an absolute, absolute monster on stage in the best way possible. And you know, you bring up the Titanic, and like a lot of people that have, you know, there's us opening off Broadway right after Titanic closed, right after Cole left Oh Mary, we're getting a ton of people being like, oh, is it Titanic? Oh, is it Oh Mary? And I have to say, yes, we're similar to Titanic in terms of the era of movie we're basing off of, but the only real thread to me between the three are that we are off Broadway and we use wigs. And I think I'm so lucky to have the comparisons, but it's like, if you really look at the three different things, they couldn't be the different vibes, different senses of humor, different pacing, different everything. And I'm thrilled that people are like, including Ginger Twinsies in that conversation, for better or for worse. But
well, you know what they're doing, Kevin, is that they are, and obviously they is, I'm including myself because I've done the same thing, but what people are doing is that they are saying, oh, is it this, because all of a sudden producers are seeing the hunger for shows that take huge swings, that are gay popcorn, that are like it's like they're completely different, but they at least speak to the same deep need for like really stupid, but also brilliant, big gay spectacles that I think for maybe a while commercial theater was like afraid of. But now I think that since Titanic and Oh Mary have hit, I think we're like really hurting for a square.
And I, you know, I would be over the moon if we had a fraction of the run Titanic had, if we had a fraction of the good reviews Oh Mary had. I'd be over the moon. I'm just thrilled that we're even here to begin with. And Constantine and Marla came to our opening, and I got to chat with them for a while, and they loved the show, thank God, because of course I literally said to them, I thanked them because between them and Cole, they opened a door in New York that had long since been shut. And it's really been shut and nailed shut since Silence the Musical off Broadway, which I did. Yes, I know.
Which I saw Silence. You did do. And I don't know if I saw you. I saw it I saw Jen Harris in it.
I didn't do it with Jen, but I did it. I did it towards the end of the run. But Jen also came to the opening, and she's going into Oh Mary. So it's like this great, sort of melting pot. Like the opening night party for this was unbelievable. I couldn't believe all my heroes were there. Alex Timbers was there. Lin-Manuel Miranda was there. Obviously, Elaine Hendricks, Busy Phillips is now one of our producers. And
oh, I saw. Also, you had the other, you have Thomas Kail, who
Tommy Kail came on board too. Yeah, he came and saw it last Monday, and by 8 a.m. the next day, he was a co-producer.
For any girlies who don't know, when he says he's now a co-producer, does that mean that he is like
helping with the financing? Is he just putting his name because, of course, he is a Broadway legend with the Hamilton herstory and the Busy Phillips of it all? Like, can you tell us what's the BTS of their involvement?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, both. He and Busy Phillips both raised money for our capitalization. And more beyond our capitalization, they've given us a longer runway to build an audience, right? Because, like I said, we opened cold in New York City. We've done no other production. We've only had two workshops. It's not like we had a built-in audience at all. So it's like the word of mouth is great. The ticket sales are trending up, but we still need that runway where before we can make run ends meet. We're a 350-seat house that is, you know, 100 seats bigger than the Lucille Hortel, 150 seats bigger than the Greenwich House Theater. So it's like, it's a big theater to fill. And Tommy Cal and Busy Phillips coming on board not only gives us, you know, the stamp of approval from their names above the title, but also gives us a longer runway financially to make ends meet while we build word of mouth, while we build a crowd. Because we only open Thursday and we had only done a week and a half of previews before that. And luckily, like, the houses are great. You know, we've got a lot of ticket deals right now, so people are coming, but word of mouth is everything, and telling and doing this. I'm so grateful that I'm doing this because it helps get the word out. But like, this cast is not to be missed, like you said. And Grace Ryder, we haven't even gotten to her. She is an absolute star. This is her first play she's ever done. She's never done theater before. And
what?
Yeah, I know. She's done sketch comedy. She didn't go to university or anything. She came right to New York. She's 24. And not only is she...
She's 24?
Yeah. Not only, I think... Sorry, Grace, if you're younger. She is true stardust, and working with her was a dream, and anything I had, any suggestion or adjustment or direction, she just said copy, and she applied it, and she moved on happily, and just, she fucking kills it in this show. And I've never been so impressed by someone who has just basically wandered off the streets into us in the best way possible.
Well, I look up to her in many ways for her, like, ability online to not be afraid to make fun of herself, to make giant, like, silly choices with her videos, and just being so, like, uniquely herself. It's like all the things that I think especially every gay person wants to be able to do, which is, like, be as much of themselves as they can without worrying about outside opinions. And Grace and Mitch Wood seem to both be people who have so brilliantly put their own comedic voice into their videos online, and then of course the 3 million roles that they play in this show. Gay people love a quick change, and I do not know how these actors are changing their costumes so fast. I need to talk about the set design, how you got one of the biggest Broadway designers to do the set. We have to talk about how your gorgeous partner, Jesse, did the movement for the show. Working professionally with your own partner, have you had any fights? How do you do it? What's happened?
I mean, it's pretty wild. I mean, as soon as I found out this was actually happening, and specifically at the Orpheum, I was like, well, I need you to do this handshake for me. I know what I want to do. I know what I want to spoof, but I'm never going to be able to actually construct it on these actors, because this is what you do. This is, I can give you my ideas, and we can. And he just, I mean, Jesse is an absolute genius. And I know I'm married to him and I'm biased, but if you saw his work on Broadway, Water for Elephants, or anything else he's done, his stuff is, it's truly remarkable, and it's smart.
And he has the Tony nomination to prove
and
it.
And he should have won. But the Tony Awards love to vote for most choreography and not best choreography.
Wait, who won that year?
Justin Peck in Illinois. It was an entirely dance musical. People have, they can't distinguish, like, oh, that has a lot of dance, so that must be good. He's the one who made it all work. I was like, I want the handshake from the film. I want to spoof Wicked. I want to spoof Chicago, and I want to spoof Stomp, because we're in the Orpheum, and it ran there for 25 years or something. And he really I don't know how he does it, but he's a genius, and I'm so grateful he did.
That is a genius part of the show, and I think that paying homage to the Stomp of it all is huge. I was shown the Stomp like VHS in elementary school, and I remember like seeing the chiseled arms with the broomsticks and being like, I'm not really connecting with the garbage cans, but I am connecting with the grizzled men in a proscenium.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you, since this is Gay Ass Podcast, can we do a quick whose fault is it that you're gay question, since it's been a couple years since you've come on? If your answer is different, that's great. If it's the same, that's great. But Kevin Zach, whose fault is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I want to say Bernadette Peters. I think it's her fault. I don't know if there's a redheaded theme here, because I think last time I said Poison Ivy, Uma Thurman is Poison Ivy, which is another redhead. But Bernadette Peters in Into the Woods being that fabulous witch and having the best song of the show, or at least the most exciting song of the show, and having magic powers and being right, you know, just being right. Like, there's nothing like being right.
Are you always right, Kevin? Do you think that you're always right?
I may not always be right, but I'm never wrong. That's from
I'm married to someone who is also never wrong, and I like to find out from the people
wrong. I definitely can admit when I'm wrong, but I think that's why I love Bernadette Peters, because she was right, and it didn't have to do with being good or bad or nice. She was just right. And she had those amazing gowns, and then of course, like, seeing her in the Brandy Cinderella in the amazing gowns, being another sort of evil character, but, you know, with all the, like, when she's recognized, when she calls Cinderella common, you could tell there's such subtext and history there of the fact that she was common, you know, and she married Cinderella's dad to marry up. And that's why she calls Cinderella common. You'll always be common. It's because that's, you know, she's projecting. And so I'm going to blame Bernadette Peters. I was lucky to meet her very briefly at the Water for Elephants opening. I was chatting with Andrew Rannells, and she was right behind him. So he introduced her to me, and I nearly pissed myself. But yeah, we'll blame her and also thank her at the same time.
A couple of follow-up questions here. Number one, you're talking to Andrew Rannells. Is it purely friend vibes, or are you both a little flirty?
We're lucky enough to be working on something together right now, which is great. So friendly, flirty, business, all of the above. But I adore that man. He is the most wonderfully charming, funny, nice man who happens to be just also stunningly gorgeous, which is not bad vibes at all. So he is
not that bad vibes at all. No, that's a great package, if you will. Question two, Cola Scola gives an homage to Bernadette Peters at the Tonys this past year. Were you gleeking out?
Absolutely. See, and I love Cole for doing that. I thought Cole was, it was off of Bernadette Peters' end of act one Into the Woods dress. I didn't realize it was her Tony Awards for Annie Get Your Gun. They look very similar, but I thought that Cole,
we kind of love the gay crossover of Bernadette's witch costume also being a reference to her own Tony Award look.
It was brilliant. I'm so glad they did that. I think if I was 10 years old seeing that happen on television, I think I probably my head would have exploded. There would have been guts all over the room.
Do you have? Yeah.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Fit guts. I'm actually realizing something dramaturgical about you, Kevin Zach, is that there's a lot of redhead love you have. Not only is your show Ginger Twinsies, not only have you talked about Poison Ivy and Bernadette Peters, but you're also obsessed with Reba. You do so many memes about Reba, another famous ginger. About Reba?
I think it's Reba. I don't know. Reba, she is a superstar and a genius musician and singer and storyteller in quotes. But it is, I, I think it's that she's also kind of drag queen. Well, there's something very drag, like country music is super drag. It is full of drag. No matter who you are the most, there's rhinestones, there's hats, there's wigs, there's fancy guitars, there's huge, like, bedazzled jeans and those belt buckles. There's something.
The higher like, the hair.
The closer to God.
The closer to RuPaul.
The closer to RuPaul. So yeah, I think that probably has to do with it as well, is that she's kind of a drag queen herself. And it's these fabulous women who are done up in, like, you never will see Bernadette without her curly red thing, even on stage nowadays. Like, no matter what role she does, she has the curly red hair. She did Hello Dolly, curly red hair. She did Little Night Music, curly red hair. She did Old Friends, curly red hair.
No, you're right. I had not clocked that. I guess her writer states that every wig must
be of her hair. Yeah. So I think that must, and then with Uma Thurman as Poison Ivy, I think it has to do with the element of theatricality of how they present themselves on stage and off.
Well, there's also a certain, like, the Poison Ivy of it all is, like, incredibly horny. And your husband, Jesse, is not ginger, but he's giving kind of blondie.
He's strawberry blonde, yeah.
Okay, we got strawberry blonde going. So then you've also been attracted to gingers your whole life as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think especially with Jesse, I was a camper. Like, I was a camp kid and a camp counselor. So my true type is camp counselor. And Jesse Robb is very camp counselor.
Camp counselor.
I think that's it. I also have it, like, when my beard is longer, it's ginger. And I don't know, I think there's something definitely fun about gingers. And I didn't, you know, it's kind of like how I don't think it's intentional, but it's like how a lot of Jim Carrey's characters have to do with the color green. And there's, you know, the Grinch, the Riddler, the Mask. I think it just happened to be that a lot of the stuff I worship or have done have had to do with red. I even did an off-Broadway musical called Red about redheads back in 2017 that Katie Thompson wrote and starred in.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's, you're absolutely.
So it really is a long-standing tradition.
There's a long-standing tradition, and for some reason.
Well, wait, the I am a gay journalist, so you say the camp counselor is your type. What is it about the camp counselor archetype that speaks to you?
I think it's the grunge of it a little bit, the fashion of it, the sort of goofiness of it, the stubble of it all, the crop top energy, but not necessarily for, you know, Pride Week crop top energy. It's more just like we're at summer camp and it's hot outside. Yeah. So I think look at Wet Hot American Summer.
You vary that. And there's something about a crop top with, like, the reveal of a happy trail that I think speaks to me. Yeah. My crossover with you is that I've always had, like, a daddy slash if you have 1% more, like, responsibility than me, I'm really turned on. And so, like, I had a camp counselor, Kevin, that I told the story a long time ago, and it's tough, but I had a crush on him. But then it became complicated because he started to talk to us about his sex life, and we were fully, like, you know, not old. And so it was, like, a little bit, would that be considered immoral? Sure. Unethical? Maybe. But I was, like, front row seat hearing this man talk about how he's fucking one of the female counselors on the other side of camp. And I was like, the only thing that he said that was fucked up, and again, he should not have told us this. I don't think this was okay, but it happened. He told us that he tried anal for the first time. He did her in the b-hole and he didn't like it, and I was like, well, I'm less on board.
No, I mean, none of my counselors ever talked like that, but they didn't have to for me to just be driven wild. Like, I can remember most of their names. I told you this in the last podcast, so forgive me for repeating, but if we talked about this, but at the summer camp I went to, we did these things called ham jams, which was like a cabin put on basically a live music video. We all lip synced to something, right? And I convinced everybody to do Madonna's Beautiful Stranger because Austin Powers had just came out. So it's like, that was my win. Naturally. Was like, oh.
Yes.
And it's on the pre-show playlist for Ginger Twinsies. I convinced everyone to do this Madonna song because I was like, it's in Austin Powers, and they all loved Austin Powers. So I got to be Madonna, and I got to lip sync while they were all Austin Powers characters. But that day I got super, super sick. Like I had like a fever, and I was trying not to tell anybody. I felt terrible because I wanted to do the show that night, and I ended up doing it. And then I can still like see how blurry my vision was as a 10, 11 year old, 9 year old. And then as I was walking back to our cabin, my counselor looked at me, he's like, you don't feel so good. You don't look so good. And I was like, I don't. I'm like in a blonde wig and like a tank top with like tennis balls for boobs. And I pass out on the, like right on the grass there. And then I come to, and he's carrying me to the infirmary. And so like, I can still picture looking up at his face, like in his arms. And it was 1997. I was 9. So that was a formative experience. The fact that like, I wish I had a video of me being carried by this man while I'm a 9 year old dressed as Madonna.
I mean, yeah, talk about a core memory. I find it to be so beautiful too, that you said the show must go on. You said 9 years old, I don't care if it's 103 fever, this story needs to be told.
And I did it. And then I fully passed out.
We've really been indoctrinated since birth that we're not allowed to call out. We're not allowed to call out. It's not.
I know. And there's the pluses and minuses of that. You know, I'm still very much a show must go on type person. People will hate that I say that, but you know, I've done the 8 shows a week, and I know shows are really, really hard, and Broadway's really, really hard, and show schedules can be brutal, especially when they open. But I'm also just like, you know, when people ask for like 2 days off, and like, I totally get that. But we've also chosen a life that is purposefully outside of society. You know, we work at night because we want to entertain those who are in the norms of society. So it's like you've picked a line of work that cannot possibly function on a normal person's work schedule. It cannot possibly be sustainable on that, because Broadway is inherently capitalistic. It's capitalism. There's no way to make Broadway socialist, right? You can't. Each show is its own small business, and they must sell tickets in order to run. And so you've got to do shows. You've got to do 8 shows a week or however many shows a week to make ends meet. And so I think theater people, I find that I get along most with theater people that realize they've picked a life that is never going to be necessarily consistent or lucrative or give you the right time off or give you enough time off. It's sort of like you do it because you truly, truly can't do something else. And that's something the pandemic really did teach me, is I have no other skills. I can't do math. I can't take tests. I can't build things. I have got a terrible back. It's sort of like you've picked this life that is outside the lane, and you should try and do it no matter what. Obviously, don't go to work if you have COVID or the flu, but like, you know, the amount of dedication, I don't want that to start waning.
No, I think that's a great point, because I think that when you do sign up for a life in theater, you are, like you're saying, on the fringes of society. You are agreeing to being of service to entertain and not to go to your cousin's wedding, which is a very like bitter, I think, a bitter pill. And that's probably one of the difficulties of people who do it for a long time. But that's why it's such like an Olympic effort. It's because the audiences can feel inherently, whether they know it or not, that they're watching something. People are sacrificing something and showing their deepest vulnerabilities and, you know, creative souls while also living a really fucking hard life. I mean, that's why when I see, like, at opening night, Lin-Manuel Miranda is there, Celia Keenan Bolger is there at Ginger Twinsies, Jesse Tyler Ferguson, there's all these people that I just, like, look up to and adore. And I, you know, I down the line would love to go back into doing theater, but I took a step back for so many reasons. But because we have Broadway on the mind right now, you worked on Death Becomes Her. Before I ask about it, what was your involvement? Because I love that show, and I've talked about it a bunch on the pod. What was your part of Death Becomes Her?
I was the writing associate. So I helped out with the book and worked with Marco Panette. And so I kind of came on board about 2 years ago, right when Christopher Catelli came on board as a director. And I cannot tell you the difference between that script and the script that ended up on the Broadway stage. Unrecognizable. And I think Marco and Julia and Noel are all geniuses. Most funny, funny, hysterical people. Christopher Catelli has an editor's eye, and he copy and pasted and rearranged and cut and really made that show make a lot of sense. It had drifted quite far from the source material, which I was the proponent of the source material. I was like, your first audience is going to be super fans. And if you do them dirty, they will take the entire show down with them.
Oh yeah. A gay fan who's angry is not a fan I want to be in the room with.
Yeah. And so the script had to hit certain tent poles from the film in order for that first audience to run away and say to their gay, to their straight friends, you've got to go see this show. Not only does it do the movie justice, but it makes this part better. It makes this part, and that you got to see how they do this live, that kind yes. of thing. So
it's, were there any Kevin Zach either punch-ups or pitches that you either like hear the line on the cast recording or on a clip that's gone viral? Are there any like lines or parts that you were able to be a part of the writing that you're very proud of?
There's nothing in the there is one sweet thing. Julia and Noel in the song Hit Me, they've put my name as one of Helen's ex-boyfriends, which is so sweet. Bobby, Kevin, Ernest, yeah. And there's a lot of my jokes that ended up in the show. I can't think of any. None of the viral stuff, all that viral stuff is strictly from the album, like That Was Rude and all that kind of stuff. And Tell Me Ernest, that's all Julia and Noel, they are. I will sing their praises forever. Noel actually did the original music for Ginger Twinsies.
Oh, I saw. I clocked. It's just the theater geniuses right now. We're in this like beautiful renaissance of gay genius stupidity.
And Marco, I mean, he's written for sitcoms for decades, so his arsenal of jokes goes back to the Golden Palace. God, what's that? Not Cagney and Lacey, the other one. Alley and whatever, I can't remember, but so his sitcoms, you know, set up punchline jokes, he's got like a Dewey Decimal system of just one-liners that are crazy and funny.
Okay, so that brings me to my next topic for you that I would love to sort of manifest our futures as we continue to create. I feel like there's two things that we have to do as creatives. One, be present in working our asses off and enjoying the work we're doing and not have any cares about the outcome, because in this industry, we cannot guess what is going to happen, but we can also shoot for the stars and manifest what we would like to see. So question number one, Ginger Twinsies, currently running until October 26. What is your dream scenario for the show? If we could manifest, without saying like, you know, we're not going to try to jinx, or as a Jewess, I try not to, what's the word when we like, you don't talk about when a baby, you don't design your baby's room until after they're born, because Jews really? Are so afraid the baby's going to die.
Uh-huh.
What's that called? Superstition. I don't want to be superstitious, but I also want to manifest. Kevin, what are we manifesting?
I'm manifesting that, you know, like you said, knock on wood and everything, that Ginger Twinsies extends for as long as it can and gets a great following and a huge audience and goes to London. That's my dream, is that it goes to London. I think this cast is unbelievably sensational, and they're all people that deserve spotlights, deserve attention on them, especially, and I say this because he's one of my best and oldest friends in New York, Philip Teratula, as Meredith Blake, is revolutionary, revelatory, and insane and smart. And so his process, watching him work, he is one of the greatest actors on earth, and he makes everything work. And it's always the choice. He makes the choices you never expected or you could come up with yourself. Yeah. And they're always the right yeah. choice. You can't make a better choice yeah. than his choices.
Mm.
So my dreams is that we get a great following. We extend, all of that good stuff that gives these actors longevity in work, and also sets them up for people if they want, like, come see these actors and then try and poach them from me if you can, because they're so fucking good. And yeah, that's my dream, is that we extend so these actors can be seen by everyone possible, and then that we go to London, because I just could move there in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, we talked about London in our last, this is coming back to me, in our last interview, you were talking about how much you were into, like, sitting at a fucking pub and talking to whoever sits next to you, enjoying a gorgeous goblet of beer. We also love a British man. So let me just for a second give manifest snaps. We're manifesting extending the run. We're manifesting London. And beyond, Kevin, and beyond.
I thank you for that. Yes, please, please. I am, you know, all day I'm just like, how can I help let the word spread about this show? And you know, like I said, Tommy Kail, who came on board last week, we've been emailing back and forth since he came aboard, and he has been nothing but generous and kind. And he's like, anything you need, let me know. If you have like a crazy ask, if you'd like to come see the show, let me know. And he was, you know, I told him, like, I'm getting out of town and I'm trying not to think about the show. And he's like, you've done your work. You've made an incredible show. And now it's really onto marketing, onto word of mouth, onto producers to really carry us to the next level. And luckily I'm surrounded by incredible people, but it's still, people have to buy those actual tickets and they got to buy full price tickets. And that's the gag of it all, is that the word of mouth is great. And now people have to click buy. And so
I said this to you after the show, and I just want to like echo it, that it's so hard to be like brave enough to even put into the universe you want this show to happen, and then to actually make it happen is a whole other feat, and then after that to then fucking have to post to promote it and sell tickets is a nightmare. And I think that what Tommy said is, it's like hearing that from someone like him is really fucking cool, because at the end of the day, we're living in an era where we have to produce our own work. But then at a certain point, you need to take the week off or focus on your next project or fucking sit and relax. But it's very, very hard after producing your own shit for so many years to take that time and actually give your body and brain the rest that it really, really needs. But, you know,
it's so hard. I mean, I for the past, you know, we had a very quick rehearsal process. We had 4 days of actual tech before we started previews. So I've been just this exposed nerve for like a month and a half or so. And it's hard to come down from that and let it scab over and not be like, oh, okay, I like it. You just can't look online. You cannot do anything, because I'm this close from spiraling without even seeing anything, without even worrying about anything. So it's like, you saying it's so vulnerable, that it is beyond vulnerable to be leading a room of brilliant actors who are listening to you and trusting you, and as well as these my three lead producers, Preston Whiteway, Jenny Steingart, and Mandy Hackett, put such blind faith in me to not only write it but to direct it. Like, I could not, I had to, like, I told them this too, so like they've heard this, but like I've had to disassociate a lot of it, because I can't. People on Thursday night were like, how do you feel? And I was like, I feel nothing right now. I can't. If I felt right now, you would see a human explode. Because people were to talk with, you know, my parents and I sat right behind Lin-Manuel and watched him watch the show. And then right in front of Lin-Manuel was Alex Timbers, who I just worship. So it's like I was watching two people that are geniuses watch something that I wrote and directed. So it's like I have like one of the best writers alive, one of the best directors alive, watching me write and direct for the first time in New York. And thank God
I don't know how
exactly
I don't know how you did it.
Leave my body and just use my Catholic upbringing and not feel a thing. And luckily they gushed afterwards, both of them gushed, and it was, I almost couldn't even take that in, though I forced myself to, because I adore them both. And it was that Thursday opening, which is only like 3 days ago, was a wild dream come true. And I will process it in like probably 6 months and have a mental breakdown.
Which is okay. We look forward to the insane posts that all of a sudden you're manically sharing on Instagram, and we can tell that the beta blockers have finally worn off. Well, listen, Kevin, I am going to ask you the final podcast question to round us off, and the answer can be different every day. So we'll see how you feel today when I ask, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress. Who would you save?
They have to be living?
No.
Okay. I'm going to say Conchata Ferrell.
We love Conchata. F-E-R-E-R-E-L-L. Conchata Ferrell. Who the... Oh, we love Conchata Ferrell. I never knew that was her name.
That's her name, yes. And she, you know, her probably biggest claim to fame was she was on the entire run of Two and a Half Men. But I know her from...
And also... Yeah, sorry. What do you know her from? Because I'll tell you then what I know her from.
Her many guest appearances in Murder, She Wrote, but most importantly, Erin Brockovich.
Mm-hmm.
When she yells...
She was excellent.
Yells at Julia Roberts. It's called accountability. I'm not talking to you, bitch. But Conchata Ferrell was always there growing up when you needed her. She was always on like every pilot that got canceled after one episode. And I'm so thrilled.
Wait, is she alive or dead?
She died.
2020, October 12th in Sherman
Oaks. She had a great sort of final chapter, like 11 years on a hit sitcom. So I'm so thrilled she had that as sort of like her final act. But that's who I would say.
Conchata Ferrell. Oh my God. Well, may she rest in power, and may we thank her for her character actressism, all of the work that she did, and the fact that she made her sitcom money. She deserved it. And I know, and I do know, that she right now is on the other side feeling a bunch of gay men be like, yes, queen. I feel like, I think she's
I have
feeling
one
it.
More, and I just want to add real quick, if that's okay. Conchata Ferrell is a redhead, I just realized. So I don't know if that means anything. And then I just thought of another redhead. I also would say if there's a second save, it's Amy Yazbeck. And you might know her from Dracula, Dead and Loving It, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, The Mask. She was kind of Mel Brooks's 90s Terry Garr.
Yes.
Gorgeous. Also a redhead. Surprise.
Okay, shout out to all of the redheads that Kevin has saved and continues to save. And another shout out to character actress Elaine Hendricks, who plays Meredith Blake in the Parent Trap film, who is a producer on the show, who has been so amazingly a part of the journey of getting Ginger Twinsies to take over the world as it should. Kevin, I have to just tell you that when you said yes to coming back on the podcast, it is such a gift to me, because any chance I get to peer into your bearded face
Likewise.
Is just a great day. And any fucking time you would like to come on and chat with me, it is like, say the word. And I am a lucky girl to have had you back on this gay ass podcast. So thank you for coming back
I
on.
I am so grateful to you, Eric. And I would be happy to come on anytime. And thank you for coming to the show. And thank you for helping spread the word. I'm so, so, so appreciative of your
anything
handsomeness
I
and
can
your
do. Oh my God, Kevin. Anything I can do, I will. And everybody listening or watching right now, the link is in the description for Ginger Twinsies tickets. It's at the Orpheum downtown in New York City, running to October 26th for now. And if anybody wants to DM me and ask if I really mean everything I say, I will not only tell you I do mean what I say, but I will do anything to bribe you into buying tickets, because you will not be disappointed.
Yay.
So go get those tickets. Go have a fucking great night out. And Kevin, let's have you back on soon for another Gay Ass Gab.
I would love to. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Or if you're watching That's a Gay Ass Podcast on YouTube, leave a comment to let me know that you are here, or press like, so we can bow down to the goddamn algorithm. If you would like a horny bonus episode, which I think you do, this week's guest is Tyler Varvel. He may be followed on Twitter under the guise of Gutter Spice. He's hot, he's hairy, and his stories are delicious. That is at substack.com/@Eric Wills, where this country bumpkin talks about his first fook and also how he sometimes goes to a swinger bar in Nashville and picks up straight couples. Y'all, it's yummy. Substack.com/@Eric Wills. I love you all so much. And as always, stay gay. You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you're subscribed to us on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, Spotify, Apple Music, or Patreon at Gay Ass Podcast. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.